It's time to know your lane.
You said get out of here for the final segment, and then you disappeared. You would have left Noodles on his own for, like, the final segment.
I would have been fine. I would have just thrown out the three stars. I don't know if I would have done anything else. I probably would have been Garth.
I'm having a good time. Not.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN Go app. Brian Hayes, Jamie Noodles, McLennan, the O-Dog will be back in a moment. Dirk Hayhurst coming up in about 10 minutes. Jay's back in action tonight. Bartolo Colon making a rare appearance in Toronto. He was here a couple of years ago with the Mets, and we all went down to that game.
Boy, did he take a time walking out to the mound. I think I timed it. Wasn't it over 30 seconds?
It was like 45 seconds. He gets out of an inning, and it takes him 45 seconds to walk to the dugout.
Well, he takes his time. And he actually played pretty well that night, I believe.
He did. I can't remember who won the game, but he got himself out of some trouble. And
he's a good player.
Listen, he was pitching really well with the Mets. He's been a disaster in Atlanta, though.
Yeah, he's settling in. New system.
Settling in. 7.22 ERA. I mean, at some point, it's going to catch up to even him.
Yeah, it's
he is a medical marvel. 290 pounds, 43 years old.
Yeah,
it's still humming, but
at some point, Father Time's going to catch up.
I would think so.
Maybe this year.
And hopefully, he doesn't turn things around starting tonight, because the Jays have won 5 in a row, 11 of their past 15, and they're starting to move up the standings here and starting to feel pretty good about themselves.
Right.
Yet another member joining the DL today, Steve Pierce.
I know.
Is now on the 10-day DL. It doesn't stop with this team.
But they're chipping away.
I guess as long as, I can't believe I'm about to say this, but as long as you have Justin Smoke, Ryan Goins, and Kevin Pillar, you're all good.
You're all good.
You can win ball games apparently in 2017. So Dirk will join us in about 10 minutes. Game 2 of the Eastern Conference Final tonight, Ottawa taking on Pittsburgh. I don't know if Ottawa got credit or just got chirped for that win on Saturday.
They should get credit. Pittsburgh had a couple good scoring chances. Craig Anderson, I thought, was outstanding. And Ottawa played their game. They just blanketed Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh couldn't get too much flow going.
It's so ugly, man. It's so
ugly.
It's very effective. Full credit to them. It's got that kind of New Jersey feel to it where they just try to shut you down. And if they cannot, if they can't get a 50-50 battle on the forecheck, they just all drop.
Could you see Ottawa make it to the final?
Yes, I could. I still think Pittsburgh will win.
Right.
I absolutely think Pittsburgh will find a way to win this series, but I can't say definitively it's absolutely not. I mean, no. Ottawa can plug away. Why can't they plug away?
Well, I was reading Bobby Ryan's. He had another article on the Players' Tribune, and he said Pierre Dorion had a speech to the group and said, "Why not us? Why not us in here in this room?" And they've kind of stuck by that little mantra. Like, I think they're using, I don't think it's negativity from the outside because nobody's really bagging on them.
No, I don't think people hate
credit. On them. It's just it hasn't been the sexiest of styles, and there's not a lot of massive. Although it's weird because the storylines coming out of Ottawa are incredible.
They are, but it's like soap opera stuff. It's off the ice kind of stuff.
Right, right.
Like at some point, your product has to sell. It has to be interesting. Like that game last night in Anaheim, that's as entertaining of a game as you're going to find. Like
lots of goals. There was lead changes.
There's drama. There's hatred. There's, you know, penalties. There's a lot of different material that came out of that game last night. Ottawa, I think, though, I mean, their own owner said this a few weeks ago. It wasn't much of a sales pitch, but he said, "We win." I mean, it's really boring.
Yeah.
I believe those were his words, like verbatim. It's really boring to watch, but it's effective, and it is. I don't know how sustainable it is long term.
Right.
I don't think you can expect them to continue at this pace in overtime. They're 6-1, I believe, in overtime.
Yeah.
At some point, you would think a bounce is going to go against them in OT,
right,
and then maybe all of a sudden it starts to unravel on them. But you mentioned Bobby Ryan a moment ago. Is it possible for him to be an unsung hero at that price? Second overall pick, 30-plus goal seasons? Is that even possible for him to be defined as like a John Drews type?
It It is just in context because he had such a poor regular season statistically. And part of his article writing today, and I know this just from being around the team, is Guy Boucher had asked him to play a different game. Almost, and it's interesting, when we talk, well, I'll bring it closer to Toronto, Mike Babcock asked Nazem Kadri to change his game. Now, Kadri changed his game but backed it up offensively, where Bobby Ryan changed his game and I think had a real tough time not getting chances and not creating. And plus, he had the injury bug. Like, he seemed to be hurt more often than not. But it's a great story for Bobby Ryan on a lot of different fronts. If you get an opportunity, go back and read the Players' Tribune today, or I think it was today or yesterday that came out. Bobby's story is pretty very, very unique. Like, he grew up in a real, let's call it a messed up situation, and you know, was in New Jersey and moved out to California and had to change his name and stuff, and his father spent some time in it's well known, it's well documented. His father spent some time in prison, and Bobby got a lot of help from a sports psychologist. Like, it's a really interesting story. And when you look at somebody, you forget sometimes the challenges they had off the ice, and probably what made him normal was probably playing hockey and being around guys and kind of being in that team dynamic. I'm happy for the guy. I agree. Like, if you put your GM hat on and your fan hat as far as organizationally, you start looking at the price tag that comes with him.
Well, he's the highest paid player on the team. Yeah, rules. Like, right. I don't think people realize that. He is the highest paid player on the team.
He is.
And he's got 4 years left on his deal after this.
Yeah.
And yet people are treating this as if it's a coming out party or as if, again, he's like a Lonnie Bohannis type. And, and I can't adhere to that. When you've been in the league for 10 years, you were the second overall pick, you've scored 30-plus multiple times, 60-plus points, and you're the highest-paid guy on the team.
Yeah.
I can't treat you like you're some guy who came up from the American Hockey League.
No, I don't think you should.
But it seems like that's what, like, people, like, that's kind of the narrative around him. Like, wow, look at Bobby Ryan. It's so great to see him finally do something.
Well, I think the people in Ottawa were so down on him this year that it's refreshing, like, hey, this is what we needed at the right time type of thing. Is we need this guy to come through with big goals, or he's a really talented guy. There's nobody's ever doubted that, but there's been a lot of other doubts. You know, you go back to the Brian Burke comment. This guy doesn't know how to spell intensity. Is that what I think Burke's comment
said,
was?
Couldn't spell intensity. That's when they were working on the 2014 Olympic team. And I think it was Scott Burnside was in there, and Burke didn't realize that literally everything they said was going to be considered on the record.
Right. But that type of stuff, I agree with you. I don't think you can say it's a breakout, but it's a nice, for lack of better words, comeback story from such a terrible regular season. Statistics.
I'll grant you that for sure. I mean, he's putting up big numbers. He's scoring OT winners.
And I think that's what people would be focusing on that are fans of the Senators, is to hell with what he did in the regular season. Earn your paycheck technically when the chips are down. And that's what he's been able to do. But you can't call him the Bohannis or Drewson. This guy's been in the league.
Been in the league for a long time.
The expectation level is 30.
Well, that's
do that.
That's what I'm saying. Is right. If you get paid 7.25 a year, you're the highest paid guy on the team.
Yeah.
You are supposed to be doing this.
Yes.
Bobby Ryan came into the league with the expectation that this is what he was going to do. When he was on a line with Perry and Getzlaff and putting up big numbers, and when they acquired him in Ottawa, it was like, okay, this is going to be Bobby Ryan's team in a way.
Right.
Or at least he's going to share the spotlight with Erik Karlsson.
Yeah.
He's going to be the new Danny Heatley. And it hasn't worked out for him that way in Ottawa. But he's finally paying dividends. He's finally rewarding ownership and management and a fan base.
Right.
With this kind of performance. And like you said, there isn't a fan in the world that would take regular season success over playoff success.
Right.
If you're really going to step up and finally do something, do it in
now.
May. Don't do it in October and November.
Right, right.
So he's doing it at the right time.
The only thing I would term it is a little bit of redemption from a real poor season. But his salary's not changing. The way that Guy Boucher uses him is not really going to change. So that's where the comments moving forward about Bobby Ryan is more about, would you pay that much for, if you start getting into salaries, for a guy who plays on your third line and really is more about a checking role. And he's gone up and down the lineup. Health was a big thing for him this year. He always seemed to be, he had the hand, I believe a hand issue twice.
Yeah, he did.
There was a time where I was calling a game. He got a slap shot kind of in the midsection, and he had to leave there. Like he left a lot of games this year banged up. He had a really tough season. So that's why I think it's a nice story, but it's a story for this season, but nothing's changing next season unless he goes. Listen, if the guy goes legend and scores them the Stanley Cup game-winning goal,
everything's worth it.
It is.
Really,
it
like,
really
listen,
is.
What we have realized, L.A. is a perfect example, and I've said this before. If you give me a cup or two, I don't care how you got there.
There's a lot of passes.
And afterwards, you would expect you're going to be granted a grace period and a honeymoon period, which I think is would happen all throughout sports. But at some point, you're going to have to get back on the train, right? Like, talk to Dustin Brown about that. Talk to Mike Richards about that. But, yeah, if Ottawa continues this kind of miracle run, and that's what it feels like, and they get through Pittsburgh, which would be the biggest upset in a long time, I would think, in the playoffs, because I don't think Ottawa's a lot different than Toronto, and people approach the Maple Leafs and Capitals as if it was an impossibility to believe the Leafs could beat Washington. I'm not sure how it's much different right now with Ottawa and Pittsburgh. So if they can get through Pittsburgh and get to a cup final, they're not going to play anybody that's better than Pittsburgh. They might play a team that's more finely tuned at that specific time. But in terms of overall talent, I mean, it was pretty much conceded throughout the year. Washington and Pittsburgh, the two best teams in the league.
Yeah.
So if you get through them, you have to feel pretty good about yourself in a cup final. And if Ryan keeps doing this and they find a way to win, then, I would say probably next year, even if he only scores 12 goals, people say, but remember.
Yeah,
remember
exactly
when he went on that miracle run for 2 months.
The one thing I'll get people to, if you dive into the Ottawa Senators roster, like, their D are good. Craig Anderson's really good. And I think what it is they're absent of up front is the true superstar. So
they've got a bunch of really good players.
Yeah, exactly.
You're right. We'll get back into that. Duthie will be in studio to kick off the 6 p.m. hour. But we've got Dirk Hayhurst on the line, our baseball insider, and it's brought to you by Oakland Ford Lincoln, your premier source for auto service and sales in the GTA. A lot of positivity up here in Toronto, Dirk. Jays have won 5 in a row, 11 of their past 15. Are you starting to believe that maybe they can turn this season around and continue to be in playoff contention?
No. Next question.
Why not? Considering all the talent on the DL, I mean, at the very least, you got to give them credit for what they've done the past 15 games.
Well, I do give them credit for what they did before Seattle showed up. But I think we know that in this next stint between the Braves and then just the passing Seattle Mariners, I mean, these are two AAA clubs. Fighting another AAA club for who's the best of the AAA clubs right now. I hate to say that, but the truth is, I mean, you have a AAA team buoyed by a couple big leaguers for Toronto, and that's the case for the rest of the lot as well. There's just not a lot of talent on these three clubs at the moment. Now, Seattle was rolling into town with 80% of their starters on the DL. And we think it's bad when they got, 40% or two guys in the rotation. I mean, almost everybody's been wiped out. So you saw a lot of replacement parts for Seattle, and guess what? The guys actually, they're productive offensively, which is what the Blue Jays have needed for a while. But what frightens me here, there's two sides to this coin. You can be positive about it, and I'll understand why. And the first side is that, you know, if they stay in the middle of the pack, right, or at least get themselves in the middle of the pack with this underpowered team that they're throwing out there right now, when you do get Donaldson back, when you do get Hap back, when you do get et al. Back off the DL, then you have a much better ball team, supposedly. But it's not like these guys are just going to show back on the field and all of a sudden they're going to be back to MVP form. I mean, there's going to be some adjustment time. Tulo's going to need some time to get settled in. Donaldson's going to need some time to find a swing. They're probably not a lot. Hap will have to find his rhythm again. But at least you know when these guys come back, the team could potentially be a lot better if it could just hold its ground now, and it's got the right teams going up against it to do that. Now, on the flip side of that, I mean, Jose Bautista has been hot right now, and I give him that, but his swing and miss percentage is still going up. So that leads me to think either he ran into a couple pitches at the right time, and then the rest of the time he found some walks and pitches out of the zones. But I'm not counting on his bat to continue to be a key productive player. And that's still one of the bigger names in that lineup that needs to be offensively potent. And when Troy Tulowitzki gets back, yay, defensive upgrade. But it's not like he has ever been the Troy Tulowitzki that was traded for. And Josh Donaldson is still going to have to do a ton of work even when he comes back. So I think that right now you're enjoying a great swing against some good opponents for an average team to look good against. So it's going to give you some hope, but I'm going to need to see these Blue Jays get better against high-quality clubs consistently before I'm ready to jump in again.
Here's the counter on that, though, is if you look at Seattle, you mentioned their rotation. 80% of the rotation is on the DL. Yet their bats were still alive, and they scored 6 runs in 4 games. And I think when you look at what the Jays staff has done, and a lot of the focus has been on Pilar going smoke because no one saw this coming. Those three guys have kind of carried this team offensively. All three of them clearly will not continue at this pace for the rest of the year. I'm not sure any of them will even continue at a pace that they're close to right now. But you look at the rotation. Estrada continues to be money. Stroman has been money all year. If Sanchez is back and back to form, which means Cy Young-type stuff, their rotation was expected to be top three or four in the American League. And over the past 15 games where they've been winning a lot of ball games, even with some spot duty from Biagini and Bolsinger, who goes again tonight, they're starting to pitch really well. Osuna looks like he's back to form. So I think I'll grant you, clearly, 1 through 9, this lineup is still terrible. It's been terrible for a month, if not more than that. But if and when Donaldson comes back, if and when Tulowitzki comes back, if and when Martin can come back and start to hit more like he did in the second half last year as opposed to the first half or the way he started this year, with their staff being what it is, I think they can win ball games. I don't know if they can get back into a playoff hunt or a playoff position, but you got to give credit where it's due. Their staff has been very good, Dirk.
The front rotation has the resilient guys that have remained in and have been very good, and Biagini has been a nice addition. I like Biagini. Just wrote an article up on TSN.ca about Biagini and how I like him in the rotation better than I like Liriano, which I can go into detail here in a minute. But the thing is, the book isn't really out on Biagini yet. You know, he's still trying to figure out that role. Other teams are still trying to figure out him. There's going to be an adjustment period for him. You know, some other guys have been strong right now, and I don't have any reason to think that they won't be strong. But my real, I guess the crux of it for me is these guys are pitching well, but there was a lot of excellent pitching performance early in the season where guys weren't hurt. They were still dropping ball games. There's no reason for them to lose. They're just asleep at the wheel offensively. Okay. And so when these guys come back, when that rotation starts matching up against other rotations that have, let's just say average rotation has 3 excellent pitchers in it, and 4 is to go either way, and 5 is just a throwaway. You're going to start matching up against good clubs again. Seattle's not necessarily all that great off. It was terrible. Let's put it this way, from the pitching performance standpoint, because all of the aces are out. But you're going to see as it starts to break down, clubs start to make trades for reinforcements. Clubs start to reinforce their bullpen, and then when this starts to happen, the Blue Jays won't compete again. Why? Because they have no one to trade with. So even if they can get close, if they remain hot and get close, I mean, this is all if, they're still in last place. If they can get close with what they've got, that's fantastic, but there's going to be a pull-away moment where you start seeing the lack of prospects in the system really hurt them to kind of keep pace because they started so far behind. So unless these guys come back and they start hitting 2-win game-winning home runs and double the score and the record in the standings, I still think they're going to lag behind because I just don't think they have the total organizational package to be strong this year given their start.
With Dirk Hayhurst, our MLB analyst, of these three options, the ones I referenced a minute ago, which one has the best chance at continuing to be a productive bat? Is it Smoke, Pilar, or Goins?
I think it's Pilar. I think it's Pilar. I mean, if you go back and look at some of Pilar's minor league history, where he just turned the switch. I think this is a guy who figures things out and it sticks with him. And you know, of all the guys, he's going to get consistent play time. I mean, Smoke is going to platoon when you get some of your bigger bats in the lineup. You know, Goins could easily get replaced by one of the other star fielders once they get out there, like Tulo. And I think the guy who's going to get consistent bats and in order to hold his own is going to be Pilar. It's not like I mean, as awesome as it is to see Pilar doing what he's doing right now, I don't think anyone's, like, incredibly shocked that he could be a productive fielder and hitter, given the fact that he's out there doing superstar stuff all the time. I mean, this guy is acclimated. The rest of these guys have to kind of get it done in fits and starts off the bench, which is difficult, especially when you're going hot and then you get benched for a while and then you're expected to come back in and be hot. I mean, that's the worst thing you can do to a fielder. If you ask any hitter, they will tell you the same thing. When you're hot, you want to stay out there because you don't know how long it's going to last, and you want it to kind of concretize and know that you can rely on those skills. But if it's going to be hit or miss, it'll be difficult for that to happen. I think Pilar's got the leg up.
The Jays have the Braves in town for two games, and then they head to Atlanta for two games Wednesday, Thursday. They will not end up facing R.A. Dickey, who pitched yesterday in Miami. And as a result, I mean, obviously, it's not going to feel as nostalgic for people. I don't think anyone was going to come out and give him a standing ovation. It wasn't like when Edwin returned. Honestly, the more and more we look back on that trade, the more and more we focus on which player went the other way. Obviously, that being Noah Syndergaard. Dickey kind of came as advertised, boring for the most part, threw an interesting pitch that got old pretty quick, gave you 200 innings, had a decent ERA. I mean, what sticks out to you when you look back on the 4 years in Toronto? Was there anything that Dickey supplied that was really of interest to you?
What was it? Well, the knuckleball is a precocious animal.
It was capricious, I think. It was a capricious animal.
Capricious animal, you guys. The knuckleball is a capricious animal. That one I'll never let that go. No, look, I think everyone thought that R.A. Dickey was going to be a superstar blockbuster trade because he was a Cy Young winner, strikeout machine knuckleballer, the angry knuckleball guy, right? Remember that? You know, the knuckleball has so much anger, it can't be contained, and they have to get it across the border and get rid of it since fans' lives are in danger. I don't get it. Like, it was a bad trade to begin with. I mean, really just kind of banking on a knuckleball guy to be the anchor of a rotation was a dumb idea from the get-go. But really, if you look back at it's I don't think it was a complete an utter disaster. I think some people look at Syndergaard and they're like, oh my gosh, we could have had Thor and we could have the hair and the fastball and all the success. The truth is, you know, what you got for the money that you paid, even the prospect that you paid, you got a guy that ate up a lot of innings for a long time. It was relatively consistent. And the reason you have the rotation that you have now is because you had a guy like him and Burley for a while in the big leagues soaking up innings when really the team just didn't have what it took to compete. So you had to run out somebody out there that had a good personality, that was even keel, that let the locker room be a neutral ground where the personalities that were going to be the future could come up and kind of find their footing and soak up enough innings to keep the program respectable without blowing through arms in the minor leagues, pulling up guys that weren't ready, breaking their will to compete at the top, and then throwing them away. Because some organizations fall into that trap. So as much as, you know, he wasn't the super Cy Young to be or really any comparable talent to Noah Syndergaard, who's at the apex of his game now that he's young and throwing, you know, fireballs. He did an important job for the organization, which was help them punt effectively. And then when they got good again, you know, he supplied a lot of innings to let guys find their way into the rotation, like Marcus Stroman, and find their way back out again when they struggled, and then finally solidify out there. But he was that one steady innings eater that let the bullpen rest and the young guys get their feet and just kind of push the can down the road until they were ready to get hot.
Thank you, Dirk. We'll do it again next week.
Sounds good, guys. Take care.
All right, Dirk Hayhurst, our TSN Jays analyst and the Baseball Insider, was brought to you by Oakland Ford Lincoln Quick Lane, conveniently located at 570 Trafalgar Road in Oakville. A couple of updates quickly, courtesy of John Gibbons, who just spoke with the media. Again, Steve Pierce on the DL, MRI showing a calf strain. No idea how long he'll be back. Gibbons referencing Donaldson and his injury, so trying to actually put a date on it. Fruitless at this point. But speaking of Donaldson, he did say that he's down in Florida rehabbing, and he's real close. He could even return as early as this weekend. And they do believe Tulowitzki should be ready to play come Wednesday in Atlanta. So reinforcements appear to be on the way.
That'd be nice. Dirk is
Dirk's not loving the Jays.
I was just going to say, he is not loving the Jays right now.
I mean, he would barely give them, you know, some. Like, they're 11-4 in the last 15, and he's like, yeah. Should have been 12-3.
Yeah, he's okay. He's not loving what the Jays are doing right now. But
no.
I think he looks at big picture. But
well,
still.
Listen, like I said off the top, man, that crater that they dug themselves in April, they're still digging themselves out of.
For sure.
You start 2-11, and you're 10 games under 500, you know, whatever it was, 20, 30 games into the season, you're in trouble.
Right.
And they're still in trouble, and they still have a long way to go, and they've got to be very consistent and very good for the next 125 games.
Yeah.
But 11-4 is 11-4.
Yeah, you'll take that anytime. I mean, you've got to find a way, and they're clawing their way back in. If they were 4-11, what kind of...
It truly would be over.
Yeah.
If they started the way they did in the past 15 games, they went 4-11, it would be absolutely curtains, lights out, see you later.
And Dirk would be on fire.
Dirk would be on fire. Dirk would very much be on fire.
Yes.
We'll get the O-Dog back in here. James Duthie in studio at 6 p.m. We should get to what Greg Popovich had to say.
Yes.
About Zaza Pachulia and him taking out Kawhi Leonard. And it sounds like Leonard will not play in game two. Huge missed opportunity for the Spurs.
Yeah, even I was in on that game watching some of it. And I remember thinking the Spurs, they're in good shape.
And you're up 25. You've got to close that game out.
20-minute nap later. This guy, they are out to lunch.
It's honestly like watching a video game, though. It really is like watching a video game. There was a sequence where Steph Curry threw up a three, missed.
Yeah.
Somehow, I think Durant picked up the rebound, threw up a three, missed. And then Curry got it back again and threw up a three and, of course, hit.
Drains, yeah.
It was just like, you know, like, okay, just keep shooting, keep shooting, keep shooting. And they drained these impossible shots. And Steph Curry had 40 last night. And he was unbelievable. Durant did nothing until Kawhi Leonard left.
Yeah,
but then once he left, he looked like the second or third best player in the world. And they play a video game. They really do. And if you can't win that game, I'm not sure how you're going to win a game.
Right.
I think the Spurs will get one. I have too much respect for Popovich and that organization. I think they'll get one. But I got the Warriors in five. And how about the Celtics over the next 48 hours? Game seven tonight. And then tomorrow night is the NBA lottery. They have Brooklyn's pick.
Right.
The best odds at winning the lottery. So over the next 48 hours, they could punch their ticket to the Eastern Conference Final and win the lottery and have the first overall pick.
That's pretty impressive.
In what is being deemed the deepest and best draft since 2003,
right,
which happens to be LeBron, Carmelo, Bosh, Wade, their draft.
Impressive.
Can you imagine Eastern Conference Final and the first overall pick?
It's not bad. It's not bad.
I would say that's a team moving in the right direction.
You know who I didn't like last night from Golden State?
Draymond Green.
He's a pain in the ass out there. Like, he's always whining and
he's a hypocrite. Like, he took a run at Kelly Olynyk last week and called Olynyk dirty.
Yeah.
And he's the guy last year that got fined all those times because he kept kicking guys in the pills.
Yeah.
And he knew exactly what he was doing. And he talks smack and he takes runs on other teams.
I know.
Thing is, he's in the perfect spot because he's a very good player.
Yes.
Like, really, really good player. I think he's got potential to be a future Hall of Fame type player. But he's got Curry, Klay Thompson, and Durant around him.
Right.
So he can just kind of blend into the game. And
he was yelling at the ref and just being a suck. Like,
it's never a foul for him.
Yeah,
he never fouls anybody.
I didn't like his attitude last night.
I like that call out. I love him as a player, but he
had a poor attitude.
He bothers me at times.
Yeah.
All right, Duthie in studio in about a half an hour. Eddie Lacy making money, and you'd be surprised, or maybe you won't be if you've been following this guy's career, as to how he raked in 55 grand. We'll tell you about that next. James Duthie in studio to kick off the 6 p.m. hour. Couple of disputes in the golf world. A couple of guys taking runs at other guys on Twitter. And
I can't wait to hear this because you said golf is a little bit more polite.
Yeah, there's etiquette that comes with golf all the time.
And
so
we can't get into this other. If you get an opportunity, go watch John Daly on Barstool Sports, the Instagram account.
Don't watch it at work and don't have kids around.
Exactly. Don't have kids around and keep the volume down because he's gooned.
He's got to be, right?
Yeah, he has to be gooned.
He has to be.
We couldn't even doctor it up enough to play it on our show.
Well, O sent the text out earlier saying, you got to find this. And then I think you made the suggestion maybe we could get Mullen to censor it enough. I listened to it 5 minutes before the show. I was 2 seconds in. I'm like, we're not playing this.
Yeah, you can't.
You can't play it. There's no way. So we'll get to that later in the afternoon. I should point out Antonio Daniels will join us, NBA champ with the Spurs, NBA analyst, Sirius XM Radio. That's in about 10 minutes. We'll get his take on Popovich, calling out Zaza Pachulia. Do the Spurs have a shot in this series? And like we pointed out, the Celtics next 48 hours. But Eddie Lacy, formerly my boy because he was a Green Bay Packer,
right,
signed on with Seattle, I believe it was. Now, this guy has had weight problems throughout his career. Mm-hmm. Very talented running back. When he's borderline in shape,
right,
can be very effective. He got really bloated a couple of years ago and basically was a disaster for the Packers.
Right.
And last year, that was the final straw. He had injuries, too. He's had concussion problems.
Yeah, banged up.
And they finally said that's enough. This is such an NFL story where they put weight incentives in contracts. Does that happen in the NHL?
No, because you can actually...
I wish it did.
You can nullify... There is a clause in the NHL standard player contract where if you are...
Our buddy got
shape,
sent home.
Yeah. Grant Fuhr got sent home by Keenan in St. Louis. I think Kachuk did in St. Louis. Like, there's some guys, and those are well-documented. But there's... I'll actually dig it up in the clause because I can look at a player contract... It's not a specific, like, it's
no,
not
No, it doesn't
specific.
Say it like a certain weight, but it says if the player shows up to camp in unreasonable shape or something like
right.
that.
Well that's
team.
Going the opposite way, right? That's
right.
Okay, you're not in shape, so we're going to punish you.
Right.
And you don't have bonuses anymore in the NHL anyway because of the hard cap, for the most part. I mean, rookies
right.
do, and if
right.
you win major awards or whatever. But Eddie Lacy's always been a guy who's been pretty heavy. And he has, I believe... $380,000 or $390,000 worth of weight loss incentives in his contract.
Really?
And today was the first weigh-in worth $55,000. $55,000 to be under 255 pounds.
Missed it.
Made it by 2 pounds. 253 pounds. So
I guarantee you, today's Monday?
Yeah. Tuesday's 265.
The next Tuesday at 4 p.m., put him on a scale, he'll be 280.
I totally agree. It's like cutting weight
for
fighters.
He did the UFC cut weight. That's what he did.
I'll bet you he was up all night in a sauna riding
yes.
a bike.
Yeah. He was sleeping in a sauna for a week.
He's like, I got to lose 20 pounds tonight. That's worth $55,000. I mean, I would do that for $55,000.
I know
grand.
A player. I won't out the guy, but he battled his weight throughout his whole career. And he had to step on the scale before the game. And if he didn't weigh, I think it was 255, he wasn't allowed to play. So what he did is he bought a tanning bed machine and would have his nap in it to try and sweat out some weight that afternoon after pregame. And he would starve himself sometimes during the day just to cut weight to play.
This guy was in the National Hockey
NHL.
League? How can he be 255?
I think Feather had a trick where, you know, the scale where there's the little ridges on it and you have to slide the little thing?
Yeah.
He would...
Put it in between.
He would put it in between.
We all know the tricks.
That's a great move.
It was a veteran move. Well, might have threatened the trainer as well.
I give credit to Eddie Lacy, man. You don't want to blow your brains out early. You don't want to drop to like 235.
No.
Just slowly chip away.
But
just get a couple pounds under.
That's cutting it pretty close.
Bring in your 55.
You know, he was starving.
It's literally, you would be sweating it getting on that on that scale.
He's
because you'd be thinking, you know, 2 hours ago I was 253.4. I don't know what I'm going to be right now.
Well, he's probably a couple diuretics into it and
I pulled
just come
that
off
once.
The toilet. Yeah. It's not good.
Our assistant coach said, get on the scale, and we're going to take numbers today. I got on. I said, I'll be back in 2 minutes. Can, back on, 5 spot, gone. Gone.
Wow.
You had a 5 pound
dude
deposit.
That's like what an elephant drops. All right, Antonio.
You always have to come up with the most ridiculous comparison.
No, that's true. Though.
Big guy.
Did you miss the big guy conversation? I've got to.
By the way,
you on
I got approached in Starbucks, and the guy said, "I am a big guy, and I don't like big guy." I just gave him the head.
All right, Noodles will be the judge, jury, and executioner on this. Duffy in about 20 minutes. Antonio Daniels, longtime NBA, are next. James Duffy in studio to kick off the 6 p.m. hour. Game 7 in Boston tonight, Celtics-Wizards. The NBA lottery's tomorrow night. The Celtics have the best odds of winning the lottery. They could be in the Eastern Conference Final and picking first overall. And the Raptors are contemplating what they're going to do with their future. Good spot to be in, I would say. Greg Popovich not too happy today, essentially ruling out Kawhi Leonard for Game 2.
Drop the manslaughter comment.
Yeah, he got heated on Zaza Pachulia.
He was wound up.
Thing is, coaches do this all the time, and they forget that they had their own players that did dirty stuff.
Yeah.
And they always support them. Someone has dug up Popovich supporting a dirty play by Bruce Bowen back in the day. Bowen was as dirty as they came. Popovich didn't have a problem when it was his guy.
No, on his team. That's
exactly. Why. Let's bring in a guy who's very familiar with Greg Popovich. He was a former Spur. He won a title with the Spurs. Now he's an NBA analyst with SiriusXM. Here is Antonio Daniels. What's happening, Antonio?
Brian, Jeff, Jamie, how are you guys?
We're doing well.
Doing good, man.
I mean, we enjoyed that game yesterday, but obviously in the end, you know, Golden State finds a way to win, and now we're talking about Zaza Pachulia for some reason and what ended up happening with Kawhi Leonard. Take us through that play from your perspective. How dirty was it? What did you make of it altogether?
Okay, this is number one, in all professional sports, your reputation precedes you. So what you do prior to something happening has an account on how people view that. Because I tell you what, if you look at the challenge by Zaza Pachulia and then go back and look at the challenge by Avery Bradley on John Wall at the end of the game, there's no difference. There's no difference whatsoever. The difference is Avery Bradley is a second-team or first-team all-defensive guard. Zaza Pachulia is, quote-unquote, a dirty player. It happens all the time in the NBA. It happens all the time. Now, what makes this situation worse than others is, number one, it's an MVP candidate. It's the San Antonio Spurs' best player and the guy who gives them the best chance to win. And he got hurt. He got hurt. That's what makes this situation so bad. Because if Kawhi Leonard just comes down and twists his ankle and he gets back up and he's playing, nobody is calling Zaza Pachulia dirty and he did this intentional and so on and so forth. You're going to get different views. My view personally, and actually living here in San Antonio now, I am hearing all about this. I didn't think he did it intentionally. I didn't. I thought he put his hand up and he tried to close his space. Now, if you're trying to do it intentionally, you're looking where you're placing your foot. Because there's a lot of different places that you can place your foot. He did the same exact thing Avery Bradley did. He put his hand up, put his foot down, and looked at the trajectory of the ball to see where the ball was going. So was it a foul? Yes, it was 100% a foul. And it's something that the NBA needs to look at as far as throwing that into the flagrant category as well. But did he do it intentionally or intentionally try to hurt Kawhi Leonard? I don't think so.
Do you see there's any way that San Antonio can recover from a loss like that? A lot of times emotionally in any kind of sport, when you're up and you drop a game like that, your ability to recover is just down the tubes. How do you see the rest of this playing out? I mean, I had a bet with the gentleman to my right that I don't see San Antonio winning a game now.
Well, you know, I actually had San Antonio winning yesterday. I picked them to win game one, and that was the only game that I actually picked them to win. Because when you're off for a lengthy amount of time and you look at Golden State, they've been resting, they swept, you know, they ran through everyone, and now they're right back up. And it takes a while. You can't simulate playoff basketball. You can't simulate Western Conference Championship basketball. So by the time you get caught up to the game speed, when you're playing a team as good and as disciplined and the San Antonio Spurs, you find yourself down 20 points at halftime, which is what they did. It's unfortunate that Kawhi Leonard got hurt. It really is. Because that was one that San Antonio easily could have pulled off on the road. And it could have changed the series. Now, moving forward, after you give up a 25-point lead, and now Kawhi Leonard's out for game two, how confident are you? Because the difference is, this is not the Houston Rockets. When you were down in the fourth quarter and overtime without Kawhi Leonard, and then in game six, of the Houston Rockets, that's a different animal. Now you are facing the Golden State Warriors, the best team in the NBA by far, the most talented team, the team in the league that has so much firepower. It's going to be very difficult to see the Spurs recovering. I can see them getting one at home just off of pure emotion. But as far as the series goes, I just can't see it happening.
We're chatting with Antonio Daniels, NBA champ with the Spurs, NBA analyst with SiriusXM. Could be a wild 48 hours in Boston. It will be regardless of how everything plays out. But they got a chance to get to the Eastern Conference Final tonight if they get past Washington at home. And then tomorrow's the NBA draft lottery, and they have the best odds at actually winning it. And by all accounts, the top of the draft this year is absolutely loaded. In terms of them actually having the chance of winning a title, which Boston Celtics event over the next two nights is more important? Game 7 against Washington or the lottery on Tuesday?
As far as winning a title?
Right. Like, in other words, even if they beat Washington, they're not going to beat Cleveland or Golden State, right?
No, but I don't think – LeBron James is not in the lottery. You know what I mean? There's not a guy in the lottery that is going to change the outlook of your franchise that quickly. So Markel Fultz or Lonzo Ball or somebody else that you get, they will pair with Isaiah Thomas in the backcourt if that's indeed who they decide to draft. But does that really put you over the top against the Cleveland Cavaliers? You need more than just this lottery to get over the top. Maybe you bring in a guy like Gordon Hayward. That changes things. So you bring in a guy like Gordon Hayward from free agency, pair him with Isaiah Thomas and Lonzo Ball or Markel Fultz and Al Horford and some of the other role players they have. Now you're starting to close the gap, but it's going to take a lot more than beating Washington and just the number one pick to get you past the Cleveland Cavaliers.
You just mentioned Lonzo Ball. What is up with his dad? I mean, is this as crazy as social media is making out to be? Or
like, he's a genius.
He's a genius?
In today's culture, yes. In today's culture, because think about it. We're talking about it.
I know.
We're talking about it. And that's exactly what he wants. So regardless is what we're saying or how you feel about him, I've seen LeVar Ball on SportsCenter. I've seen him on Sports Nation. I've seen him on First Take. I've seen him on Highly Questionable. I've seen him on every ESPN show that there is. So the reason I call him a genius is because in today's culture, in today's society, you can say what you feel. It got Donald Trump elected president. So why can't LeVar Ball do it? I'm not saying I agree with what he says or how he goes about it, but he's doing it the right way because people are discussing it. The fact that we are on ESPN in Toronto, on TSN, and we're talking about LeVar Ball and not about his son, he's doing something right.
Well, at some point, I'd like to believe we'll talk about his son even more than the old man.
I hope so.
Right?
I hope so.
But, I mean,
well, if I'm the son, I'm telling him to take a lap and leave me alone. Don't ruin my career.
More importantly, exactly.
The thing is, you could talk about it, but are you shelling out the $500 for the shoes?
Oh, me?
Yes, you, Antonio.
Oh, man, quit. Don't even ask me that question. Not a chance.
You got money, man. You got money. You can dole it out if you have to.
No. Whether or not you got money or not, I'm not paying $500 for a pair of Lonzo Ball tennis shoes.
I'm with you on that.
I'm not paying $500 for a pair of Michael Jordan tennis shoes today.
I'm with you. Always appreciate the passion. Always appreciate the insight as well. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you guys for having me.
Antonio Daniels, NBA champ with San Antonio and NBA analyst with SiriusXM.
Like that guy.
Yeah, he's fired up.
I like the passion.
Yeah, he's great.
Well, he's right. I mean, Trump did get elected, but he might get impeached because of that, too. So watch what
you
wish
played in the OHL. We played in the NHL. If your dad was causing that kind of disturbance, and he just mentioned the culture nowadays, but still, wouldn't it get to a point where you would say to your dad, look, I know you're my guy, but like, just take a lap.
We are talking about it, but like I said, the bottom line, nobody's buying them.
Well, no one's buying them, which is an important
We'll get
part
the number after break.
Yeah, we'll try to get the breakdown on how many shoes have actually been sold. And we'll get Duffy in here to kick off the 6 p.m. hour. Final hour up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.